Okay, so Main Chafford podcast episode 100. We've made it. We fought after all the countdowns. The last 90, we've more or less been on the journey to this particular episode.
Indeed, indeed.
So excited to finally get here.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
If you're
very much
hearing that voice, it's the wonderful Femi who's joined us.
Indeed.
He's going to be our guest on this beautiful occasion.
Special guest for a special episode.
That's a fact.
Thank you very much.
Round of applause.
100 episodes, man.
100 episodes. That only has to be right. So Femi, please tell the people about yourself. This is the opportunity where we give to you to let the people know. Obviously, the book's coming out as well. So just give all the details that you know.
Yeah, nah. So maybe I'll start with the book.
That's the best place to start.
Of course.
But yeah, nah. So just to paint a little bit of a picture how the story flows. It's a 16-year-old boy named Esso.
Mm.
And he's basically wedged between two very different friendship groups. Mm. So on one side, he's got a group of friends who are sort of peace-loving, piss-taking mates, basically. On the other side, he's got a group of mates who are like, you know, just also piss-taking, but like kind of dragging him into life and death peak situations.
Yeah.
Right.
And then at the same time, there's this girl named Nadia who's at the front row of class at school. And he's like the for longest and is trying to figure out how to tell her he's obsessed with her. So one day he's trying to catch the 36 to school, sees this kid about to get run over and pushes him out of the way. And he gets smacked by this 4x4.
Damn.
Not just out of consciousness, but out of like reality. As we know, he gets knocked out into this place called the Upper World. So that's what the book's called, the Upper World.
Right.
Yeah, and in this place, you can see time the way that physics describes it. So like his whole life is just stretched out in front of him. So like his birth is over there and his death is over there, everything in between.
Right.
And yo. So, yeah, he basically catches a glimpse of the end of his day and he sees like basically that his whole, everybody he loves and knows is about to get killed basically. And this is a crazy situation. And so he gets knocked out again at the Upper World and back into like our normal 3D world.
Mm.
And realize he's got to the end of the night to stop this happening.
Right.
Yeah. And then like a generation later, basically, we also see him in the future where he's enlisted the help of this girl, Rhea, who plays football and is like a hidden physics genius. And he's getting help to do the same thing to try and stop what happened.
Right, okay.
Gosh.
So, yeah.
That is exciting. I mean, do you know what? I always wonder when someone's on like a bit of a press tour for their new like book or album, how many times have you had to tell people that same scenario?
Do you know what? That story right there, actually, it's funny. I had a sort of speaking training session.
Really?
Yeah. So Penguin, who were publishing my book, kindly set me up for this. They just realized that, yeah, I'd be having more opportunities like this to chat.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that you do is sort of figure out how to communicate your passion and the story and stuff. So this is actually probably like maybe the first time I've done it outside of that official scenario.
Oh,
I don't know how that came up. But
nah, that's clean. That's how I was like, yo, you sold me on the book. Like, yeah, I mean, I was already very interested.
Okay, okay.
I mean, we're quite into that sort of, it's almost superhero kind of.
Yeah,
that sort of. I can't really describe what sort of genre.
Outside of the ordinary.
Yeah,
really.
This is sci-fi kind of.
Exactly. And we enjoyed that. So for us, that was perfect. Like we were already interested, but we were sold. Yeah. How do you come up with that sort of idea? Like that sounds mad trippy, but it's beautiful. It's kind of poetic in a way as well. How does one come to the conclusion and is able to write that story? Like, what was your journey from beginning to end writing that story?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, maybe one part is the inspiration. So I did, when I was really young, I wasn't like sort of very good at school. And I had maybe, you know, I think a lot of people have that one teacher
who just believes in you.
Yeah, right. Basically. And that happened with me with physics. And I just got really into it and I got very good. And eventually I went to like, uni at Oxford studying material science, and then I specialized in quantum physics for my master's, and I just got proper into it.
Yeah.
And anyway, after that happened, I didn't actually end up continuing physics like PhD.
Yeah.
And I just went to the working world, but there's so many things that happened afterwards that came from the fact that I thought like a physicist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then also the physics itself, I just think is interesting. It's talking about the universe we live in.
Mm.
If you believe what this, you know. Anyway, but let me stay back on track.
Nah, that's fine.
But that's what
fine.
I'm saying. Like, physics to me is just so intriguing because it is it's like the study more or less of our reality and why things are the way they are. And I will never be able to understand that. But that is just so intriguing on a level that I don't think we'll ever be able to. If you don't understand it like the way you do, it's not something you can comprehend. You have to have someone to
bring you along. Yeah,
exactly.
No, and to be honest, that's really what the hope of the book is. Because I wanted to communicate a lot of these ideas, which I thought, do you know, if somebody explained it in a simple way, people will dig it. Because again, things like time travel, that's what the book is
exactly,
also. Like,
yeah.
People
yeah.
find that kind of stuff interesting.
Quite fascinating.
Yeah.
So many people have their different rules of time travel. So
it's kind of,
yeah. Exactly.
What, do you have a specific rule for time travel?
Do you know what? So my rule, because I was a physicist, well, when I wrote this book, I set out to try and to explain how the physics of time travel works.
Okay.
Like Einstein's theory of relativity, which talks about time and space, explain that. It's a really powerful theory. Most people say it's probably the most, I think I can't remember the wording, but they're like the most like profound feats of human thought ever.
Okay.
Crazy. So I wanted to try and explain that in a way where people understood it, but also had a reason to give a shit in the first place, which is why I put it in a story.
Okay.
If you have like a character who you want to follow and you sort of understand what they care about and what they stand to lose, you'll go on the journey.
Yeah, of course.
And you might learn some physics by accident.
Okay, yeah, I like that. That's dope. I like that. But I think going back to your point about physics and how there's rules, especially when it relates to time travel, like, is there certain films that have existed and you've seen the time travel in it and you think, these men are chatting west? I don't know.
There's
example,
too many examples. Of
Avengers time travel, is it flawed?
Do you know what? I respect the Avengers approach. So you lot tell me what you guys think. I'm sure you've all seen
it. I mean, yeah. So Endgame's approach is more or less that if you go back to the past, that affects your future. So you going back to the past,
it creates another timeline.
It creates another timeline.
Yeah.
Or I think the whole idea of that time travel is quite simple in terms of like Back to the Future, which is a great film. But if you think about it, it's kind of dumb because you can't do that, really. It's not...
doesn't seem right to you.
No, you can't impact someone else's life. Like, he has to go back and more or less make his parents get together. Yeah. But, like, that's crazy. Like, you shouldn't the laws of physics shouldn't allow that.
No, I mean, look, this is a funny thing about physics as well, which and why I think it's actually easier for people to get than you think. One usually thinks is that it's very intuitive. You have a very basic understanding, like, this feels like it violates the law.
right.
You don't have to see the X's and Y's.
Facts, yeah.
But most of the sort of questions and intuitions that these thoughts that we have, even as a kid, when you're like, where's the end of the universe? Like,
those are questions that you can't even...
Like, where do we come from? These are all things that actually physics has to deal with.
Yeah,
that intuition takes you. But to answer your question about the Avengers, though, do you know what? The physics in it was a little bit...
all over the place.
Yeah, it was all over the place. But I respected the fact that they kept it short. They were just it was self-aware. They knew what they were doing. They're like, let's quickly escape.
Because the moment you overcomplicate it,
that's
when people lose interest and or they try to find plot holes. And when you find plot holes, it just gets a bit silly, doesn't it?
Exactly,
So I think something we can't gloss over is the fact that you are from the beautiful place in Southeast London known as Peckham. How does that feed into your work and the book, because you mentioned the bus. What was the bus?
Yeah, 36 bus.
Yeah. So talk us through how like your story, your life story is feeds into the book, because it must do.
Yeah. I mean, bits and drabs. I mean, my main character's from Peckham, but I would actually say that all of the characters reflect you.
Yeah.
So even the characters, I mean, my life is way more, it's a complicated storyline if I told you the full thing, but I was born in Africa. I spent a lot of time in the US. I ended up moving to the UK when I was 9.
Okay.
Right. And so my parents were in Rwanda at the time. And so I was staying at my aunt's house in Peckham. And then at one point going to boarding school for like basically the whole of secondary school as well.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of going back and forth between the two different environments.
Okay. Interesting.
And then after I went to uni. I then went to the States for a little bit as well. Anyway, it's all over the place. But in a weird way, I think Peckham was the one place where I had continuity. Like my aunt's house, where I'd stayed since I was 9 up to like, 20s. That hadn't changed. I hadn't left.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when you're writing something, because part of my book takes place in the future as well.
Yeah.
And so had to like think about a place where, what would a place where I could predict what it would look like 15 years in the future.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. Interesting. So I was like, you know what? I've seen a couple of decades of change in this place, especially in a place like Peckham, where it's changed quite a lot.
Of course, yeah. It's changed a lot.
So it helped kind of project into the future. Does that make sense?
Yeah, nah. So what do you, that's actually quite an interesting question. What do you see for Peckham's future?
Yeah, I mean.
They finally get a tube line.
You know what? That would be sick.
Transport in South is just, it's a just myth a busy anyway.
It's a piss take, isn't it?
Honestly, I saw a TikTok on it, which is really interesting. I won't go too into it. But basically, the reason as to why South London is so poorly connected or doesn't have a tube line is because a lot of the tube lines are named after the people or the companies that made it. So the Piccadilly line was a Piccadilly company. Whereas there was no company in South that wanted to build in South London because it's just not, the area just isn't perfect for buildings. That's the truth. Like the ground is not good for building.
Oh, you mean like geologically?
Geologically. Okay. It's not socially.
Exactly.
So the money to do it would have cost too much. That's why South is so poorly connected. Okay. Obviously, I think they're going to look to start to change that.
They've probably got different technology now as well.
Oh, they have to. South has to be more people are living in those areas. Brixton's the only place in South that has a tube line. That's ridiculous.
It's actually a piss take, you know.
That's why I asked you how you got here, because it's a mission, man.
For real, dog.
But we actually have a decent bus network, I think.
I don't know.
You got trams as well, don't they? You got trams.
What, Croydon?
Yeah, got trams on there.
You have some overground trains as well. Like,
exactly.
Peckham Rye Lane. Yeah. So it's not like
it's not the end of the world, but they need
you're
a
not
tube.
Landlocked,
line.
But
they're not landlocked. But now bus is my least favorite form of transport.
Yeah, you hate a bus. I don't know why you hate it so much.
if I can avoid getting on a bus, or if the journey involves a bus, I'll just get an Uber. That's how much I hate the buses.
He's too bougie for buses.
That's how I got here, by the way, to answer your question. I was looking at all the maps.
I can't be asked. I respect it, man.
You gotta do what you gotta do, man. 100%.
What are you gonna say?
Your upbringing in Peckham, because you said, you know, the continuity.
Yeah.
You spent most of your time there in one, long sweep.
Yeah.
How was it growing up there? What was your experiences growing up in Peckham?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like I had the lightest experience in Peckham that you could have in terms of how peak Peckham can be.
Right.
If that makes any sense. I think I kind of went to my cousins, for instance. We lived in a house, four of us. Four boys and then me and another point, another guy. So kind of coming in and out.
Mm.
And so I was going to school. Sorry about that. I was going to boarding school in Somerset, and I would come back, and it was, you kind of compare stories of your experience.
Mm.
And it was crazy. And I mean, it was actually quite jarring for me because I also came from school in the US. So I was in the US from 5 to 9, then moved to London.
Mm. Yeah.
And then went from a school in the US, which is if you see something like Boys in the Hood, it's kind of feels like that sort of Newcastle, Delaware, if you look that up.
Okay.
And then I went to from that to Harry Potter school.
Went to Hogwarts.
In the countryside. I mean, there were some stories there where when I first got there, there was one kid who was, just trying to chill with me. He was joking with me. He pushed me. Kind of just pushed me out the way.
Yeah.
And I just thought,
this is the same fight.
And so anyway, that took me, and then I got into a full-on fight, but it was just a different environment. Mm. And then I adjusted to that environment, and then coming back to Peckham and seeing different things happen.
Mm.
I mean, I won't go too much into that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not my thing to say, but. Yeah, it's crazy, actually.
Yeah, just but it's good, though, because, you've taken some of your experiences and you've kind of put it into the book and used it as, inspiration. So, you know, the book is based in Peckham.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned buses. I'm assuming there will be a lot of a London, South London influence in the book.
Yeah, it's deep in it. I mean, I think the culture in Peckham is just rich. And I think, especially as a sort of British-Nigerian,
yeah,
there aren't many places in the world, I would say, where you feel not judged. I think if I'm talking about sort of like racism, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
100%.
And so, if you go to Nigeria, they still see you as a British kid. If you go to the UK, there's still that otherness.
Yes.
Of course.
When you have black cultural centres like Peckham, like Brixton,
you feel like you belong, innit?
Yeah. It feels natural. You know?
It's like home. I remember I used to live in East London and my dad used to take me to like Saturday school. And there was a certain Saturday school in Peckham. And whenever we'd go there, it was literally just filled with like Nigerians, a couple people from the Caribbean as well, but mostly just Nigerians. And I didn't realize growing up that was such a cultural hub for Nigerian people.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely is an interesting thing. I think it's kind of crazy how like time has progressed. Think like people from that area or even from East as well, like they've done really amazing things. Like yeah, we come from bad areas, but we've managed to.
I think that's yourself. I think that, you know, I think a book like this is one of those things that could seriously change your life because it is such an interesting story. It's one of those things we could be sitting here and in a year from now, you know, you're on the sort of same level as J.K. Rowling or something.
Yeah.
Money long.
That's what I mean. Listen.
Money long.
But it is such a, when you described it there, it was such a fascinating story. And it's a story that I think a lot of people will want to sink their teeth into and get involved in as well. It's just something, the story is a story of as old as time, but the spin that you're putting on it is really what will sell it and make it different. People want to be able to immerse themselves in a world like that. And I think what you're doing is, what the book is going to do and what you're doing is fantastic, really.
No, I appreciate it, bro.
It's going to be a very exciting read. What's the most, I don't know, you don't want to give too much away at this point, but what's the most interesting aspect of the book for yourself? Like, what's your favourite part?
What's my favourite part? Jeez. That's a good question. I've never actually been asked that question, you know.
You can't say all of it.
No, I can't say all of it. Do you know what? My favourite bits are just, like, the jokes.
Mm.
One thing I wanted to do with the book, because I think a lot of books are just quite serious. Yeah. You know, when you watch a film, there's a certain amount where you're like, okay, unless this is a seriously sick film, there better be some laughs in it, like, pretty often.
Yeah. Break the tension a bit.
Yeah, break the tension. If you were talking about Avengers earlier on, that has a lot of laughs throughout.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, for some reason, I don't see that as much in books.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like, how can we incorporate that, like, how can we have conversations that reflect the kind of banter that you would have, you know, if we were kind of, just in a certain environment, kind of school environment, different environments.
Yeah.
Just having it be funny. So I think my favorite bits actually aren't even necessarily the more sci-fi bits.
Got you.
But more when you just have like teenagers making like dick jokes and stuff.
Mine's coming like in betweeners. I love it.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
That's brilliant. No, I think that's going to be a very exciting part of the film. And again, like you said, it does help to break the tension. And it is good because I think, like you said, a lot of books are serious.
Yeah.
So it is good that there's going to be those little moments in the book where...
It's needed, you know. Because, you know, if you're reading for something too long and it's too serious, you're not... Your mind just kind of zones out.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
You know what I'm saying? When did you actually start writing a book? Like, when was the beginning?
Do you know what? It's about 3 years ago now. So it took me like 2.5 years to write.
Right. Did you write much before it, or was this your first book where you're like, let's just do this?
I didn't write before.
I
literally decided I was going to write the book, and then I started reading books that would teach me how to write books.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So you've not always been into like literature running?
I was in the physics side of stuff. Yeah. Okay. So I didn't have experience in it at all.
But did you find it hard to like kind of change that like thought process to learn to how to write books and that?
Yes and no. I mean, it's hard in the sense that, like, doing anything.
you've never done it before.
Yeah, but
it's also easy, much easier than you think.
Mm.
I think writing's one of those things where most people, and I was included in this until, like, 3 years ago, most people believe that either you're a good writer or a bad writer.
Okay.
Almost like you're born with the skills or you weren't.
Right.
But there's the cheat codes. So, like, there's the code book, and if you find it, there's actually a lot of things that you...
Is it finding a cheat code for yourself, though? Like, the one that works best for you? Or it's just... There's a cheat code and that's it?
It's sort of like... Imagine, it's like anything. It's like music. You could spend the whole time trying to look around to find the song that best... But, like, most of the time, you just look at what your mates are doing. Like, what the most popular music is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with writing. There's, like, a number of books where these are, like, the recommended books...
yeah,
that will get you there. And there's, I mean, like, if you're ever interested in writing, I could obviously share them with you. But I think reading like a book to a couple hundred pages, you'd be surprised on the writing process. You'd be surprised just how much you can pick up, and you'd be like, "Oh, that's how they're doing that."
Mm.
And you'll never read a book the same way, or you never watch a film the same way.
Yeah.
Oh, once you've seen the cheat codes as well, it's like, oh, that's what they're doing.
Fair enough. No, I think that's what they be doing. I get that.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's interesting because you say, as in terms of, I think we're all quite into film, and then when you watch stuff online, especially for me, like I watch this thing where VFX artists, they react to the VFX in films, and it's just ruined my enjoyment. Really? Well, not ruined, but now I'll be seeing stuff and I'll be like, yo, it's janky.
Give us
an
example. What would you say?
Oh my God, there is some bad CGI. I mean, the best example, I think we all know it, is as good as the film is, the CGI in the third act of Black Panther is some of the worst I've ever seen.
It is really bad.
The budget ran out. the way
Mama said wrap it up.
I didn't understand. That was like the climax out as well. You just had to watch this cartoon.
Like that rhino looked fake. And then when they were both going at it in...
See, I don't mind when they're outside and they were fighting, but once they came to the railway system, that's where it looked like it was PS2 graphics. He's looking like the Flash CW type shit right
for
now.
For real? Nah.
I was not feeling
once
that.
You see this shit, it's hard to look back, man. They've really ruined it. And they also do, what's it? Who are the people that do stunt men react? They also do that. And there's so many stunts that you just think, wow, they fucked up there. Like, it's a punch that shouldn't have gone that way. Serious? Or,
oh, damn.
Stunt actors want like the lighting to be a particular way. So if I see a fight scene, no matter how good the film is, but the fight scene's in the dark and it, you can tell they've not had a lot of time to come together with the choreography for the fights. You just know it's going to be piss poor.
What you're describing is that same thing.
Mm.
After that, you're like, oh, like, you watch films, you also know where they did well and where they failed.
Didn't.
Like,
right. Yeah.
It's the same thing you're talking about. You can tell like the darkness means like...
Yeah, and it's just that you can already tell, and I'm sure that's what you experience now when you read a book or you see a book.
Yeah, I'm getting there, man. I'm still pretty... I've only been doing this for a few years. And there's people who are like... I can still look at other people's writing and just be like, oh yeah, this person's like... There's levels to this.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Go on.
I was just going to say, who are some of your favourite authors then that you've been or that you've taken inspiration from going into this experience? And then just in general, really.
Yeah, it's all over the place, honestly. I'd say on the author side, people like Chimamanda.
Pretty nasty, man.
What's up, bro?
What are you saying?
What's up, bro? It's all good, bro.
No problem.
100th episode. E-Man just walked in the building.
Got to get our aliases off, actually. We didn't even do that. E-Man G45 in the building.
What's going on? Hello. Sorry, I'm a bit late.
No problem.
Yeah, it was just... It was horrible, man. Because quite literally 5 minutes from close to the yard, like next to the yard. The station is 5 minutes to the yard.
Yeah.
And then I timed it. And the moment I got to the station, I just saw the train leave.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah.
There's nothing you can do in them situations.
Sorry,
go,
man. Sorry, bro. You made it, though. Bro.
That's the most
thing.
Thank God.
Thank God for life.
We thank God I'm here, but yeah. Sorry, yeah, I'm late.
That's calm.
Yeah. No worries, it's kind of mad because this is the 100th episode and like everything's supposed to be.
It's fine, you're here, bro.
It's fine. You've still got time.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
100, baby.
You made it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So yeah, I think the question was
inspirations and stuff. Yeah. So I think on the book side, probably Chimamanda, Stephen King. I don't know if you've read anything. If you haven't read it, you've seen a lot of his films, like the Green Mile, Shawshank Redemption, all based off his stories.
Okay.
But he's sick. Orson Scott Card, he does a lot of sci-fi stuff.
Mm.
But honestly, because when I was writing this book, I wanted to partly reach kids. I think music was a big inspiration as well. Mm. Just to like see like the way drill and sort of grime was just rising in the UK.
Mm.
I mean.
So is the music reference in the book as well? Or is that something?
Or is
you can tell that the influence is
there. You can tell. There's a couple references, yeah. But you can tell as part of, I mean, when you grow up as a teenager, that's when you listen to most music.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Hear that.
That's where you form your identity with music.
Honestly,
that's the point where you go from listening to whatever's on the radio to actually forming your own.
That's a fact.
Your own taste, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And what you listen to at that point is what you hold on to probably for the rest,
of your life.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Nah, so, I think that, but I don't know, man. I'm not one of these people who has, like, a picture of someone on my wall.
Nah, I hear that. That like, makes sense.
Like Mike.
Like Mike. Yo. He's a legend.
You know, one thing is great, though. Like, we had, it was Katie who came on, and we were discussing just, like, black people and writing and making books. And it was, like, black males in particular typically don't write and typically don't put books out. So the fact that we've had you here is actually a really amazing thing.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And, like, it's just interesting to think, like, you didn't even start with writing in mind. Like, you're obviously about physics and stuff like that. You know, your journey into physics, was that just through you choosing, or was that from like your parents or an external source? Because in my life, science was never really the thing for me. Like I was good at maths, I was good at English, but science was always to me like, I can't wrap my brain around it.
Okay.
So was that something you just chose, like that comes to you naturally?
No, it's not. You remember I said earlier on about how writing is one of those things that you think you either get it or not?
Mm. Yeah. 100%
believe that physics and maths are those things.
Okay.
The same way, it's not like you're born or good at it or not. Either somebody gives you A, the curiosity, that's a big thing, and B, the cheat codes. That's what determines whether you get into something, whether you get good at it. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are differences in terms of how we're born, but they're way, way, way weaker, in my opinion, than the environment.
Interesting.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Nurture over.
You also made a mention that your teacher.
Well, nature of an issue.
Yeah, I just had a teacher who, do you know what? It happened in two stages. The first was one of my mates told me the fact that, like, apparently America and Russia had, like, thousands of nuclear weapons. It's like I was like a 10, 11 year old kid.
Mm.
And he's like, each of these nukes, like, the nuke that they dropped on Hiroshima killed 100,000 people.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, a lot of those people instantly.
Mm.
Right. And the amount of material that created that fucking fireball was like the size of this bottle. That's how much matter was converted into energy.
Yeah.
And so it just A, blew my mind just as a concept. B, I was like, yo, how many of these nukes are
instant paranoia, bro.
So I'm just sitting in my bed just like, what if Russian somebody presses the wrong button?
They still have the same amount of nukes, isn't it?
What's that?
They still have the same amount of nukes. They've not produced anything.
It's insane how many there's.
And now I'm hearing they've got a hydrogen bomb. Like,
man. The ones that they have now are like 10,000 times more powerful than
Jesus. They're trying to make it current if they ever drop, man.
Mate. So I think the one
it's over, bro.
It's over.
The one that dropped in Hiroshima was like only a certain mile radius.
Yeah. Mm.
Whereas this one. So, like, if you drop it in London, it can go all the way to Manny.
Mm-hmm.
Manny?
Yeah.
Damn.
No, the weapons are crazy. You know, if you drop a nuclear bomb in space, it creates an electromagnetic pulse that will shut down all the electronics on Earth.
Yeah.
But, like, in that place where the pulse reaches it, basically.
Yeah. Yo, these man should not be playing. Like, just don't have them. Get rid of
insane.
It.
Honestly, yeah, so that bothered me. And then I just like, you know, I want to learn more about this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, you know, that curiosity got into me. And then it needed an outlet. And the gap is short, right? If you don't get something to feed it, it probably would have killed. I never would have known I was good at this stuff.
Match.
Yeah. But then I found someone, the teacher, who basically kind of said, oh, yeah, have a look at this book. Have a look at this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of went from there. But when I was younger, I was very bad at school. And at one point was meant to get excluded from sort of mainstream schooling because I wasn't keeping up. So that's why I'm such a strong believer, because I saw it go a little bit from one to the other intellectually, you know?
Yeah.
So when a question would be, when you finalize a book and you're looking for a publisher, how does that go about? And obviously Penguin is a big name. So how does it, obviously, they must really believe in the product as well, which, you know, informs us of how good it really is. How does that come? How do you go about getting to that final stage of publishing?
Yeah, so, I mean, it depends on, there's different ways to cut cake. And I definitely have, I don't have like the book on how to do it. I can tell you my experience, basically. But
sure.
So I wrote the book. I mean, I think these days, back in the day, you could write like a couple chapters.
Mm-hmm.
These days you still hear about every once in a while, like somebody was having a conversation with somebody and said, hey, I want to write this book. And they're like, okay, I'll give you a deal to write it.
Mm-hmm.
That shit doesn't really happen.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Um, so So you come, you got to come a bit more correct, especially in fiction. Non-fiction, you can put a sick proposal, do most of it later. But I finished the manuscript. I got a lot of feedback from people, like sort of people on the kind of more bookish side, like my friends on ends as well, to make sure, you know, everything made sense and it wasn't going to get like, just trying to get different angles because everybody has blind spots.
Yeah.
So you have to iron that out. So I sent it out, then I sent it to them. And no, I sent it to my agent. No, I should tell you how I got the agent, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like everything. It's a mix of networking and just having your shit correct as well.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you have to have both of those plus some luck.
Yeah.
But I had this one friend who I went to uni with who published a book.
Mm.
And she's actually gone on to have, like, quite a lot of success.
Okay.
So I chatted to her and I said, can we grab some coffee? I mentioned at some point, yeah, I'm writing a book. It's a couple, you know, maybe a year or so away. It'd be sick if you could have a look. Hoping that if it was good enough, she might send, you know. So I finished the first draft and I sent it to her.
Mm.
And she just responded with like three bullet points of like, you need to change this.
Oh, man.
These were deep changes.
Oh, man.
So I went, spent another year working on it. And then I sent it back to her and she was like, okay, I'll afford it.
All right.
And then I lined up a bunch of other ones. I had like a Excel spreadsheet and I sent it to like a few others, but actually they all came back actually with some interest, if that makes any sense. Yeah,
that's great.
Okay.
And so, but I had a good process because, you know, with the concept of the book, I'm trying to do physics plus like a contemporary culture kind of book. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those aren't two things that most people saw together.
Yeah. Mm.
And so I got advice from, for instance, black writers who are just like, you know, bro, I don't think this is gonna work. Like,
oh, wow.
Oh, interesting.
Not only that they were like, no, this is sick, but I don't know if they'll get it.
Okay, if it will translate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we did a bunch of things to try and get around that. I actually ended up making like a 2-minute YouTube video, like a sort of reel of it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just to explain the concept, explain who I was. So I sent that with the package, with my book, basically.
You got you.
The sort of Word file, plus a 2-minute YouTube video. And it worked.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank
you.
For real. Because that's a lot of, I guess it's a bit of a journey, and it's a process, but I think it's a process which you'd have to go through. But that makes complete sense. Like,
yeah,
the journey that one would have to go through in order to get from one place to another with the book. And it's good that you got that much feedback because I feel like you covered every corner as well.
And including like physics feedback as well.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, just getting
so all there was no ground that wasn't covered.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's not a perfect book, but like you do your best in it.
Course. Don't say yourself short, man.
First of many though, you know
exactly.
What I mean? Hopefully.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
No, do you think there's a world where there could be another follow-up book almost?
Yeah,
two?
No, I'm writing the sequel right now.
Damn.
Okay.
Exclusives.
Nice. You heard it first.
Number two is on the way.
I'm writing the sequel right now. I'm going back to Africa for it as well.
Okay.
I'm excited for that.
Nice. Well, isn't it going to be set in...
Partly. So the book one is set in Peckham, but book two is it's a prequel sequel. Have you seen like The Godfather before?
Yeah.
Yes, how two goes to...
Sound number two.
Yeah,
it sort of goes back to like his dad, Vito Corleone.
Yeah.
But you also see Michael... After the events.
In the present, yeah.
So it's the same kind of deal.
I like that.
So it sandwiches the storyline. Like so you kind of get...
The understanding.
Yeah.
That's dope.
And so the main character, like, we go back to his
almost like Power and then Kanan.
Like what?
Power and then Kanan. You know, like Power on like what 50 Cent has shown.
Oh, the show.
And then now he has Kanan.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Is that like a prelude, is it?
Yeah,
a
prequel.
Three
or four episodes. Now, four episodes as soon as this comes out, but it's three episodes in at the moment.
Do you know, I never got into Power, you know.
I don't blame you.
I watched like 3-4 episodes. I thought it was pretty interesting, but there's just so many shows out here right now.
Mm.
Yeah, you made the right decision to start.
Yeah.
after season 3 is just...
Really? But people say it's sick though.
Yeah.
My wife loves it.
It's alright.
I don't know.
It's alright.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Snowfall's better. In my humble opinion.
Yeah, I've not seen season 4 yet, but yeah,
Man Like Damson,
for real,
Man Like Damson, it is much better.
I clocked on the episode that came out recently, right? And you're like, slap your daddy, yeah. And I realized that's from Snowfall.
Yeah, that's,
you stuck that right in at the end of the episode. And I was like, where did this come from?
So one of the episodes, basically. Well, it's a spoiler, but I think it's in season two.
Yeah.
And basically, one of the main characters gives a kilo of cocaine to his friend, and his friend's dad takes it and doesn't give it back and doesn't pay for it.
Okay.
So, and his father is a porn director.
Just throw that in the mix.
So, like...
This is a great scene, to be fair.
So basically, the main character's uncle is excited to go to the father's house because he knows that there's going to be women there because that's what he's known for. He goes in, busts through the door. It's not what he expects to see. He's shooting porn, but it's gay porn. So then now everything just goes like it's a completely different scene. And then, moments later, they're basically saying, what happened to the brick? Like, we need the brick. And then it just continues, and it's like, you know what? You need to slap your dad.
Like, where are the titties? There's supposed to be titties in.
Yeah.
It's a great scene.
Slap your daddy. It's just the way he says it. It's like, what?
He's really well spoken. Like, he's borderline got a British accent.
Fantastic.
And, insane.
Oh, serious.
Yeah.
The Brits don't play, man.
Sorry, we went completely off topic.
Completely off topic, but yeah.
What I was going to say. Okay, so what are some of your favorite theories on in terms of the world of physics and time travel and sci-fi? Like, what are some of the things? Because I'm quite into Neil deGrasse Tyson and all of his, and how he speaks about physics and how it works. What are some of your favorite theories?
Do you know what?
I
think my the one I like most right now is quantum field theory.
Break it down for the people.
You really want to? You want to do this?
I don't think you can. Can't you? Quantum.
Do you know what? So
try and break it down.
Try. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna try on this. You know, I literally had a whiteboard out this morning, writing down like all kinds of stuff and equations, trying to do what you're asking me to do right now. and I didn't finish. So I'm gonna try, because this is also some of the stuff for like book two, but all right. So very simply, imagine an empty world, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Empty universe, nothing in there, right? And then the first layer comes in, which is a field, almost like a substance, right? Invisible substance, but it's a field that's throughout the whole universe, and it's called the electromagnetic field, okay? And at certain points in the universe, it's almost like got like a string kind of nature. It can have fluctuations,
right?
If that makes any sense. So at certain points, it could like oscillate, right? So that's one field. Then you have this other field called the proton field, and you have a bunch, in total, I think 25 different fields all overlaid on top of each other. Okay, and each of them having different sparks and fluctuations in different places.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it turns out that's what quantum field theory describes, the fact that the entire universe, you have these fields pervading all of space and time. And every time there's an oscillation, a vibration in the field, that corresponds to a particle.
Right.
So an electron is just an oscillation in the electron field.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you then have these things between them, which there's four more fields. And those other fields basically allow the fields to interact with each other.
Okay.
And so long and short of it, all of the forces of nature, there's four forces of nature. Electromagnetic, so that's the electromagnetic field. There's the weak nuclear, strong nuclear, and then there's gravity.
Mm. Right.
All of those things encapsulated into this field theory that describes why the world looks the way it looks.
Okay.
But that's the most fundamental understanding we have of what reality is made of.
So can we not see the electromagnetic field?
We can interact with it.
Right.
But even the act of seeing involves things going to your eyes, right? Those things are called photons. So like the light, it's called photons. And what is a photon? It's actually a disturbance in the electromagnetic field.
Right.
So we're all part of it.
Okay.
So without those four elements, there would be no universe.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
So if you took one of them away, is it like, it would be...
Was it curtains?
Yeah. It's curtains. No, it's definitely curtains, yeah.
No, I said it's definitely curtains.
Now, most of those things, they have like numbers that define them. So like, you know, like you have pi equals 3.14.
Yeah.
Like the strength of electric magnetic field is, you know, blah, blah, blah. If you move it, by even just a percentage of percentage, nothing works anymore in the universe.
Shit like that.
Like the sun
terrifying.
Wouldn't have, the sun wouldn't have formed.
That's horrifying. Like, do you know why I don't like stuff like this? Because it's just the fact we're here is just so much by chance, and the fact we're here that and it's so perfect, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
That everything works.
It's by design.
Jeez. Man, you're trying to get me in trouble with my parents right now.
Just say yes.
Do you know what I do? People who like the whole God versus no God argument, I think it's a bit of a false choice. I think that God exists. I just think it's very, very far for kind of like the white bearded dude. I think God is probably the forces that I was describing just a couple of seconds ago.
That makes sense.
Not them specifically, but just like within the reality that we exist in.
Because it's just, like again, it goes back to the point of if one thing is off, like it is too perfect. And the fact that, you know, just one thing being off and the sun doesn't get formed, you know, that's insane. Like, there's everything is here and it all comes together to make a perfect system.
Yeah.
Which we wouldn't have without it. I mean, do you study or understand the idea of like black holes and stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, not like deeply, because I did like my master's stuff was in quantum computing. So I was trying to come up with a quantum computer, which, by the way, that's pretty cool.
How does that work? In the
we are very close. We are very close to it, are we?
We're kind of close. So I worked on it like 10 years ago. And I was designing a quantum memory system.
Okay.
So the memory system that we would use for a quantum system once we built it. I mean, I didn't know it was going to take this. but yeah, we kind of all knew it would take decades before the technology caught up with the theory.
Got you.
Okay.
So what is the theory?
So, you guys are really going for it today.
Now we're trying to get intelligent,
quantum
man.
Quantum field theory done. Quantum computing now. Okay. All right. Let's do it. So, man, do you want the 1 minute version, 2 minute, or three minute version?
Give us the two.
The 2 minute version. All right, calm. So there are two types of problems. One is an easy problem. One is a hard problem. An easy problem is one where when you increase the amount of things by little, let me give you an example. Let's say, for instance, I say to you, there's 10 stops you have to make as an Amazon driver, right?
Yeah.
You have to figure out what's the optimal route, the shortest route. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's actually what you call a hard problem, because every time you add one stop, you have to run all the calculations again. They call it sort of, and it scales badly.
Yeah.
And it turns out if there was 100 stops, the number of combinations that you have to look through to figure out what's the shortest route, if you took every single atom in the known universe and gave it 10 billion years, and every atom in the known universe, turn it to a computer, right? Mm. And each of those computers could be used to solve this problem, it wouldn't be solved in 10 billion years.
Imagine.
And so there's a lot of problems in life that computers are just so far from fixing because the amount of computation power it requires is insane. That's just how numbers work, it turns out. That's a certain type of problems. And a lot of things fall into this. Anyway, what quantum computers do, they take advantage of a very strange property of reality, which is that when you zoom in, right? So you have the hair on my finger, when you zoom to that, you have atoms. Then when you go really down, you have things like electrons.
Mm.
Now, an electron, at the quantum level, that tiny level, it turns out it shows these properties that make you believe that actually the electron exists in multiple universes.
What?
I mean, there's two different interpretations of this stuff, but it behaves as if there are two electrons interacting with each other when they can only, like, they've done these experiments called a double slit experiment where they shoot one single electron through a slit where it has sort of like two slit options.
Yeah.
So it can go through here or there. And they shoot one electron at a time through those slits. And the pattern that it makes on the back, because it goes through the slits, you know, some get blocked, but the pattern it makes on the back after isn't a pattern where you'd expect from just having one electron. It is as if two electrons go through it, they attract and repel each other, interfere with each other, and it creates a pattern that shows that there was, in that path, there were like two electrons behaving as if there are two parallel universes interacting with each other. Now, there's different interpretations of that. That's mine, and a lot of people agree with that interpretation. Mm. It's called the Everett interpretation. But the crazy thing about this world where you have this multiplicity is the more electrons you add on top, right, in terms of computer system, the more multiplicity you get, and it goes insane in terms of like just how the numbers blow up in terms of how many parallel universes you can connect to each other.
Right.
So what they've done, and this is what I was doing in my paper and stuff, was we figured out, well, at least in my paper, we figured out how to code a quantum algorithm.
Okay.
Which means that you can put a problem in there, and in each of the different universes, the problem is being solved.
Okay.
Right.
And so you split the problem over all of those universes so that the amount of time it takes is like that.
It's even quicker.
Yo, Kang is real, man. I'm telling you.
Get the TVA on the phone.
TVA. Black owned as well. I love it.
Black owned.
Okay, that's interesting.
Does that make a bit of sense?
It makes some sense to me. It's almost like you know, when you eat food,
yeah,
your digestive system breaks down and it gets solved at the same time.
Yeah.
Pretty much like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this one we're talking about milliseconds.
Yeah. Mm. It's just parallel processing at like a crazy scale. Yeah.
So I guess it's just trying to process as much information as possible at a fast pace as well, because, I mean, you'd be there forever if you tried to do it yourselves.
Yeah, I mean, the first place it's going to get used is for like financial crime and security, basically.
Okay.
So the way that all of our payments right now are secured is they put a math problem that's too hard for computers to solve.
Got you.
Which is, you know, prime numbers?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you solve the prime numbers are the ones where, you know, I'm going to mess this up. But long story short, you have to figure out what two numbers multiply to give the number.
Mm.
Simple as that, but it scales badly. You need crazy computing power. But with quantum computers, you can do it. So all of the WhatsApp, when it says, you know, 260-bit encryption, that's all this stuff.
Is that the 421 problem?
Say more, bro.
The 421 problem, where basically whatever number you can multiply, it will always come down. Like, you multiply it, subtract one, something like that, and it will always come down to 421.
Oh, really?
I think it's something like, they're trying to solve it. It's never been solved. It's a mass problem that's never been solved.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know, I never heard it before. But, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they're linked.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When it comes to, like, number systems and patterns, there's always links, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything they haven't resolved? I mean, obviously, that sounds ridiculous, but, like, they're on the cusp of resolving, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, all the stuff I was just talking about, quantum computing, it's still quite far away because the technology of it is hard to do.
Right.
Okay.
It's really hard to do. It's really, really hard. And so, yeah, we still got a little while. But yeah, no, in terms of stuff, like, yeah, there's loads of stuff that haven't been solved, man. The more you learn, the more you realize you don't know.
That's a fact.
That's a fact.
You believe you know everything, and it's like you don't actually know everything.
But I think there's a beauty in not knowing everything as well. I think,
100%.
Oh God, I can't imagine what being all-knowing would be like. Like, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Especially as the universe keeps on growing and developing, and then being able to resolve that, that's insane.
100%.
So I think there is a beauty in not knowing. I guess just before we round off, we wanted to talk about the Netflix deal. DK, Daniel Kaluuya, is involved. I believe it's a movie as well.
Yeah.
What's that like? And how did that come about? Because that's crazy. The book's not even out yet. You're already getting things patterned for the journey ahead.
Yeah.
Like, that must feel amazing.
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, honestly, it's still kind of sinking in.
Mm.
Yeah. I most of the time, I don't process any of this stuff like it's happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
if that
okay.
makes any sense.
Right.
It kind of like, just because it's a little bit, I mean, it's incredible. I'm blessed. It's just a high gradient of change.
Yeah,
of course. Makes any sense. Yeah.
Because the way it happened, the book deal and the Netflix deal happened in the same month.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. My book kind of leaked out, and then I was chatting to, like, I doing Zoom calls during COVID with like these Hollywood people saying we're interested in the thingy. I was just like, I don't know. I don't really understand the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's all quite new. I think the sickest part about it is just the fact that it gives me a bit more room to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
I mean, this time, a lot, like sort of a year, 2 years ago, I was working full time. And it was fun, but there was just a part of me that I knew the whole time wasn't being expressed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, of course.
And so just being able to invest in myself, invest in my creativity. Do you know what I mean? I have to learn a lot of things, but I guess that's part of life as well.
Yeah.
And the support I've gotten has been sick from like family and friends and just all around. So now I'm enjoying it.
You have to, man. When you watch the movie, are you going to be one of those guys like, you're like, oh, why did they change this about like what's in the book or try to?
Do you know what?
That happens a lot with a lot of books that become movies, don't they?
Yeah, no, I said this to someone recently, but like it's, the analogy I got told was for this exact same situation, I got given advice to somebody who'd adapted books to films before. His own book had been adapted to film.
Right.
So he'd gone through this. And I'll twist his analogy, but he basically said, imagine you design like the perfect suit, an Ankara suit.
Okay.
Like, perfect. You got the tailoring, you have your model, you know, like 6'3", everything's cut. And then somebody takes that, you sell it, and somebody takes that, and they turn it into bikini. Right? But right. Hear this.
Okay.
The bikini might have been better than your suit.
Okay, right, yeah.
You dig what I'm saying?
Okay.
And so it just depends on who made the bikini.
That's true.
I mean, in this case, it's not even a bikini. I mean, like, right now, they're actually staying pretty true to the source material. So
that's good. Yeah.
But, like, ultimately, I mean, Daniel Kaluuya's on it, so we can't fail.
Nah, you can't complain, man. That boy's a king. Oscar winner as well.
Yeah.
From the ends as well. So it's more.
Yeah. It's authentic.
It's authentic. Yeah. Mm.
And then what's his name? The other producer is a guy named Eric Newman. His company made Narcos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Bright as well, actually. A couple other films. And so it's just a strong team. So I'm more like using the opportunity to just learn and like put my creative, do you know what I mean? All that stuff.
I mean, you'd be cast as a producer on it as well.
So I'm executive producer on it.
Of course. Yeah.
I have like monthly calls just chatting through different aspects.
And I'm assuming they just want to make sure that you're okay with it.
My expertise is what they want.
Surely they
That's jokes.
It's a bit of both. I think these days they're including like authors more in that process. Before they were just like,
we're gonna go piss off. I think you'd have to be involved in it. I think it will be more true, especially the eventual fans who will be coming out. They'd want to. They'll take comfort in the fact that you were involved, because I know the author of the Percy Jackson films. She hates them. I think he or she. She hates them, and it's just like they totally demolished my creation, more or less.
Yeah.
But now it's back at Disney, and I think she's a lot more involved in the series, which is due to come out.
Okay.
Which was what she wanted. But to be fair to her, like, knowing a bit about the books and having watched the films, like, they just did not respect her.
they didn't at all.
So,
was this a situation where you sold the book to the film producers or the industry? Well, I don't know, like, of course, you can't sell it to the industry, but you sold it to the producers, or you lease it to the producers, or they just pick up and say,
"Yeah, and this is your book." It's a Netflix deal, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. Ah, right. It's kind of complicated in the background, but it's Netflix, and the producers are 59% Daniel Kaluuya's company and Screen Arcade, basically.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's generally how it works. Yeah.
Fair enough, man. With the audiobook, I think I was talking to Tom because he did the voice for it, I believe.
Yeah.
Did you have much of an input in that as well?
Yeah. Do you know, we went nuts on the audiobook.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. So I thought that like the story could just be a lot sicker if we had music in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just like some, you know, when you watch films, if you watch a film with no music in it.
Yeah.
You've lost a whole different like element.
Dimension. You lost the dimension.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I wanted to chuck in some music, basically. And so I don't know much about. I love music. I listen to like most of us, but I'm not a musician.
So
I reached out into sort of people I knew to find out people who might be interested in just doing something mad. And so there's a guy. He's an 18-year-old Ghanaian producer, beat maker. He's like, he plays drums in his church.
Yeah.
And he's a fresher at uni right now.
Yeah.
But he makes sick beats, and he threw them online. I know a guy named he raps as well. A guy named CS. Who had taken one of his beats.
Yeah.
He just saw it online and he said, like, patent it. And so he got his contact details. We got him in the studio. When I was at Oxford, the guy in my college, like a couple years below, is now music director for The Globe.
Okay.
And so he does like post-classical music. We got these two in the studio. My cousins came, CS came. We all just basically said, come up with three instrumentals for the book. One Afro beats, one drill. And then James Maloney, the guy at The Globe, made a post-classical kind of thing.
Yeah. Got you.
Okay.
So we chucked that in. And so it's kind of backing Tom Mucci's and Richie's vocals. And so it comes in quite nice. I actually think
yeah.
the audiobook is going to be a special product, especially because okay. I think a lot of people don't have time or the habit of reading.
Reading, yes. Yeah, yeah. I think you listen to audiobooks more than reading, don't you?
Yeah, more time.
Yeah. That's well, actually quite
to be honest, I've really taken the time to listen more to audiobooks and podcasts just because there's an interesting conversation, and also with audiobooks there is more conceptualizing.
Yeah.
Whereas music, of course, you know exactly what lyric they're going to say.
Yeah.
Unless you listen to something completely different where it's a completely different genre.
Yeah.
Then you don't know what to expect. But more time, in terms of lyrics, I mean, there's only much you can say on a song.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah, no, I hear that. Yeah.
Accepted by society in
yeah.
some way.
Yeah, well, it's a challenge, isn't it? I mean, I think Zadie Smith is one who said sort of, in many ways, in Black culture, because, you know, the chicken and egg thing, because books haven't been written for Black people as much as they need to have been, in terms of us being represented in books that we really, really want to read about.
Mm-hmm.
We've, in many ways, found our voice for storytelling through music.
Yep.
And yes. So
yeah.
it's ended up, I think our literary base in music is way stronger than it is in books.
Mm. Absolutely.
Like the tradition, the stories, like, do you know what I mean? When you think about your favorite rapper, you kind of, you know their story, you know where they come from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
How they feel about certain things. It's storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, I think there's an opportunity in books because obviously there's only so much you can fit in a 3-minute song.
Yes.
So if you want to tell a bigger yeah. story, then you do need a longer format. So audiobooks are interesting.
And it's good that we have people like you doing this because you can open a door for like a kid who'd be like, yeah, I don't know exactly. what to do with my life. You've written a book
yeah.
who identifies, you know, being a Black guy, like, oh, I can do this as well. If yeah. you can do it, why yeah, can't I?
100%.
So
now, honestly, I mean, it's tough because I always open with the sort of quantum physics stuff. I'll be honest, that was hard. That took work to get there. But a lot of the stuff I'm doing right now, I feel like there's a lot of just win-wins in the community, man.
Mm,
there's just just talent all over the place. And I think when there's more conversation across generations, sort of within generations as well, there's just a lot of talent that can be sort of... But yeah, I mean, I'm excited about what you're describing, though. Just like seeing young people capitalizing on opportunity today, basically.
Absolutely. Representation is key.
No, it matters, yeah. man.
It's key.
Can't put a price on it at all.
100%.
Okay, bro. So please, unless anyone else has any other questions.
I think that's it.
All right. Mm-hmm. Let me not forget because he'll get angry. music for this week, please.
We just pick a song music. To put on our playlist each week. So if there's one song you're listening to right now, feel free to plug it. Basically,
I Ooh. Saw the last one. You guys were plugging Anotina.
Yes.
Big up to him. Very good album.
That
album's
cold.
Yeah. I've even gone back to it, actually. I was just like, this is so good.
He's a madman.
He's very special.
Nah, he's very, very talented, isn't he?
It's like, just his flow in the pockets that he can get into. I don't think anyone else is doing that right now.
100%. No, his technique is, his tech is mad.
For real.
His tech is crazy. And then on top of that, he's a showman as well, right? Fact. It's a potent package.
Yes, 100%. Well, I'm going to start off. I was going to put on this song, My Muse by SNE. I really liked it, but to be honest, there's another song that I really gravitate towards, and that's
Teedness.
I don't know why he said his name.
Teedness.
This is so bad. The HB freestyle.
Really good.
Yes.
Really good. He's spitting
great
off.
Sample. Great production on the song, of course. But as I said, it's one of those songs that it's just a different individual, but it's the same similar story, and it's lovely. But this one's more of an update of his story.
Okay.
So yeah. It's a freestyle bar.
Dope.
Love that. Sick. My choice is going to be by a man by the name of Gels. I came across it on Twitter, just in the comments. You know how you see people promoting their songs, but that's more or less where I found it. It's called Bachata. It's got like a... It's drill influence, but it's got like a Spanish sort of or Hispanic sort of feeling beat to it, which I think if you once you listen to it, will really suck you in. So, great song. Yeah, keep doing your thing.
Nice. Mine is by Nas. It's called Rare. You put it on your album last week. It's really good.
King's too, no?
Yeah, number two. And there's some really good songs on there. That song stuck out to me the most. It was really in his bag.
Do you know, my one's a bit old, but it's still like one of the ones I'm repeating these days.
That's all good.
But yeah, KO Table 10.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that
perfect.
One? Nah, I don't think I have.
But we'll find out this week when we put it in the absolutely playlist. So
sick.
Nah, it's good. And that's the beauty of the playlist. It helps us to find new songs that we might not have heard before. So that is the beauty of it. So tell the people on where they can find you online. Just remind them when the book is coming out. All of that good stuff.
Yeah.
It's out. Is it out?
No, 19th.
Oh, okay. My bad. My bad.
The Upper World by Femi Fadba coming out on 19th of August. So less than a week from now.
Amazing.
You can get it everywhere you get books, basically.
Amazon, I love it.
All the rest.
Beautiful.
Enjoy.
Perfect.
It's incredible.
All right. Well, Made in Chafford podcast episode 100. One for the books. Quite literally.
Baby. one for the book. Is that the name of this episode? No. Jesus Christ.
All right, until next time, you can all follow us on everything Made in Chafford.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, peace.
Nah, cheers,
thank
boys.
Thank you very much.
Peace and blessings.
Thanks for having me. Bro.